The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Now, we already had Jim O'Callaghan of Fianna Fáil with us at the top of the programme, effectively saying that Ireland cannot deal with all the number of immigrants coming who are looking for protection, saying that 60% are economic migrants and that we do have to look after those who are here legitimately, but suggesting that we may need to find other open accommodation or tented villages in green spaces or away from city centres, as is happening at present. And I did put it to him about the comments made by Leo Varadkar in Washington this week, which he says he hasn't seen. But Danny McConnell, editor of the Business Post, is with us. Tell us about this proposal from the European People's Party, to which Fine Gael is aligned, which could see asylum seekers deported to what are called safe third countries in North Africa or the Middle East.
Yeah, so this is a proposal being put forward by the group, the EPP group, which you rightly say Fine Gael is a member of, and it's in its manifesto ahead of the local and European elections, that which are going to be contested in June of this year. Essentially, what they're saying is that it's in line, I suppose, what Leo Varadkar was saying, that what they're saying, there's the possibility of processing asylum seekers in third countries. And he was keen to stress while speaking in Washington that this is already in the EU Migration and Asylum Pact. It just hasn't, I suppose, been enacted. And I suppose this just cuts to the core of whether countries adopt or opt out of this particular provision. And essentially what it is, I suppose it's a signal, it's a nod to the growing tensions, growing frustrations, the growing concern around migration, not only here in Ireland, but across other European countries. It's in the context, Matt, I suppose, you know, there's an awful lot of conflict around the world at the moment. There's about 100 million people essentially temporarily or permanently displaced from their homes. And, you know, as the point Leo Varadkar was making, is that it's inevitable that a small proportion will ultimately end up here in Ireland. However, what we are seeing now is, I suppose, in an Irish context, the state is no longer in a position to guarantee a bed for all of those people who are coming in claiming asylum through the international protection system, the normal asylum system. And this is obviously leading to, you know, very sharp criticisms of Roderick O'Gorman and the government, given a time, essentially, we're at a time of plenty in this country and we simply can't house all these people who have come in. So, again, you know,
sorry, Daniel, can I just come in there? I mean, sure. Does this mean that if this is in the manifesto of the European People's Party, that it will be transposed into the manifesto for Fine Gael in the European elections? Because if it is, I'd imagine an awful lot of potential voters would say, why are you putting this in a manifesto and not enacting it while you're actually in government?
That's a very fair point, and it'd be very interesting to see whether or not this is transposed down into the Fine Gael manifesto when their councillors and aspirant MEPs go to the doors and seek their votes. There's enough fudge in here, Matt, because obviously, you know, just because you're a part of a European group, there's always opt-ins and opt-out. You don't necessarily have to subscribe to the entirety of a particular manifesto. There's enough flexibility because obviously you're dealing with, you know, parties from all over Europe, and then there's not ever going to be complete consensus or alignment. What Leo Varadkar said, again, it's not simply an EPP proposal that people would vote for or against in European elections. He's saying it's something that has already been envisaged in the EU Asylum and Migration Pact, and Ireland has yet to decide whether we opt in or out or not. So that's him, I suppose, addressing that point.
But indeed, Danny, then, is there going to be division within government in relation to this? Because by the way we're hearing certain Fianna Fáil TDs starting to talk, you suspect they might be trying to race ahead of Fine Gael to try and enact something which reduces the numbers coming into Ireland for their own electoral reasons.
I think it's absolutely clear that government TDs and government senators who are looking for election, be it to the European Parliament or they're looking at their own seat come the next election, are clearly seeing the way the public mood is going in relation to this. And they obviously see there's a benefit to sort of taking a harder line against immigrants coming into this country for good or for bad. I think, you know, there has been a very noisy campaign from a small group of people about, you know, Ireland being full, etc. like that. And I think as Aidan Regan was writing in her own paper, you know, Ireland is certainly not full, but I think there are definite capacity issues within the country in terms of coping with what has been a very sizable influx of people in a very short period of time. I think there are genuine capacity issues, and that's just been reflected across the board, not only in kind of housing people, but it's in transport, it's in energy. We know that the water system is creaking here as well. So there are capacity constraints within the system generally, but it is certainly playing into the political arena now. And as we go into elections, you're going to see far more government councillors and government TDs articulating a view that is not essentially in line with current government policy, and certainly isn't the kind of the policy being articulated 12 or 18 months ago when the war in Ukraine first began in earnest.
Yeah, which makes you wonder how much that policy is actually going to change. Stay on the line, please. I want to bring in Colin Malone, the immigration lawyer, in relation to this. What do you make of the possibility of Europe and indeed Ireland adopting a Rwanda-style approach like the British government tried and wasn't able to implement, whereby people who arrived in Britain were going to be immediately deported to Rwanda, where they would be processed and given asylum if they qualified?
Good evening, Matt. I mean, first of all, I don't know if that is actually the idea or the goal here, because what the British Rwanda scheme did was a little bit different to previous attempts at this kind of a scheme. What the British did for the first time was say, we're going to send you to Rwanda, and if you are successful, you will stay in Rwanda as a refugee. Now, previous attempts at what we call offshoring of refugees had always focused on the idea, and I think this may still be the idea within the EU, that you would only be sent to a third country, i.e. outside of the EU, for the purposes of having your application determined. But if you then did succeed, that there'd be an idea that you could then come to Europe in terms of availing of the refugee status. But, I mean, actually, this is nothing new. And as an immigration lawyer, perhaps I've become a bit jaded and cynical over the years. But, I mean, in 1986, Denmark first proposed this in the UN. Nothing came of it. In 2003, the UK, when they were still a member of the EU, proposed this within the EU. Germany in 2005 announced a similar scheme. Israel, in fact, was the first country to avail of an offshoring asylum arrangement in Rwanda, which had to be ended because the Rwandans weren't holding up their end of the bargain. And we now have the Italians trying to do it in Albania. So this is nothing new. And it does seem that whenever there is what people will call an immigration or refugee crisis, this is something that they jump to. But what I would say, Matt, is that this is perhaps a distraction. And it's a distraction from what we're doing in very real terms at the moment. I mean, after the 2014 to 2016 surge of people, particularly coming from, Syria, EU and Turkey entered a deal for 6 billion, that's with a B, euros, where we would pay that amount of money to Erdogan's Turkey, not a country that we would in Europe generally find to be a Western liberal democracy, and that they would stop people coming to Europe. We've entered a recent deal with Tunisia. We paid them 150 million so far, again, to, as the Brits would say, stop the boats, albeit this is coming across the Med rather than coming across the English Channel. And we've paid 105 million to Libya so far. And I mean, Sally Hayden, the Irish Times journalist, has written a brilliant book recently called My Fourth Time We Drowned, in which she outlines the fact that this money has gone to what is known euphemistically as the Libyan Coast Guard, but this is really the smugglers and people traffickers with uniforms on. So actually, as an immigration lawyer, my concern would less be around the idea that we would have people come to Europe and then be sent somewhere else for processing. My concern is for the people who are already under schemes worth approaching 7 billion euro who aren't even getting here in the first place.
We heard Jim O'Callaghan at 4:30 quoting figures from Roderick O'Gorman saying that 60% of those coming seeking international protection are economic migrants. Would you agree with that assessment? And what happens to those then who were rejected on that basis because they are not fleeing persecution?
Well, Matt, the first thing I'd say is that, in fairness, those aren't Deputy O'Callaghan's figures. Those are figures from the Department of Justice. But let me flip that. That means that 40% are, even on the Department of Justice's own figures, genuine migrants. Now, 40% is approaching one half. So if we are to talk about the people that are currently coming to this country, and if we say that approaching one half of those people are genuinely fleeing persecution, then I think the narrative around these people has to change, that the people who are moving in to places around the country in difficult circumstances due largely to a pre-existing housing crisis, which is not their fault. I mean, if we think that one out of every two of those people is fleeing persecution, then we really need to rethink, I suppose, some of the attitudes and the protests we've had towards
them. But he also said we need to rethink the number of countries that we believe are unsafe for people coming here. He says that the rest of the European Union has an entirely different view as to the safety of some of the countries from which we say we need to protect people.
There have been efforts over the last 20 years, Matt, to come up with a common European list of safe countries, and those have failed on every occasion. And the simple reason is because nobody can agree what's safe and what's not safe. But I mean, I was talking to you recently when they added Botswana to the list. And I had pointed out that about 11% of people from Botswana in 2022 were granted protection in Ireland. So, I mean, that's over 1 in 10. So when we, you know, treat a safe country as a country from which, you know, there is generally and consistently no persecution, then I think the minister has questions to answer as to how she has declared a country a safe country where more than 1 in 10 people have been accepted by her own officials. I mean, not by an NGO, not by me as an immigration lawyer, but by Department of Justice civil servants as being at risk of, at real risk of persecution.
Okay, and just to finish with you, Daniel McConnell, editor of the Business Post, one of the things that the government announced back in January, was that it would charter flights to get rid of people who failed to get asylum under the international protection process to move them out of the country. Can we expect to see such flights before we get to European local elections, almost as a way of the government trying to prove that the deportation system does work?
Yeah, I, that's a difficult question to answer, Matt, because I think there was a certainly a feeling when that line was kind of put out there by government that that you would see, you know, they've been talking, I suppose, since the influx of migrants from Ukraine. You know, on the one side, you've had Helle McEntee talking up the need for stepping up sort of checks, and this is in the context of a large number of people arriving into Ireland with no documents, etc. like that, and that enforcement would increase, and there would be this increase of deportation. We haven't seen any of the numbers that we've seen so far haven't really reflected a large uptick on that, and we certainly haven't seen kind of any chartered flights being full of people being exited out of the country as of yet. I think that was probably just kind of noise being put out there by government to say, listen, we're not essentially kind of an open door for people just to kind of come in here easily. So I think there's a bit to go in this. I think what this does, it just forces Fine Gael, like Leo Varadkar has come out and said, yes, I accept and I support this policy. It's in keeping with sort of current EU thinking anyway. And as my colleague rightly said, I mean, this idea is nothing kind of particularly new in terms of the international context. As I suppose it just will take on an extra resonance heading here in Ireland in particular, heading into those local and European elections. And of course, this is clearly now going to be one of the leading factors that people will decide upon when they go to the polls for the general election within the next 12 months or so. So I think all of this has to be viewed through the prism of the elections and party positioning ahead of that, because clearly a lot of parties so far have been really struggling to define a credible and, I suppose, a position that has landed well with their own supporters and the wider public.
Thank you very much, Daniel McConnell, editor of the Business Post, and Colm Malone, immigration lawyer.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.